Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good Monday morning. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, and hope that you're having a great start to your week. Debbie and I just got back last night from Round Top, Texas. We were with the newlywed and close class of Houston's First Baptist Church and had a wonderful time talking to newly married couples and nearly married couples. A number of couples were there, and they were not yet married, engaged, or getting ready to be engaged, but we just had a great, great time. Love those folks, and loved getting to pour into young marriages and young couples. It was just a wonderful time in the Lord. Well, when we got back, and as I had been keeping tabs on what was going on in our world, we have all these demonstrations on campuses, college campuses. They're called quote-unquote peaceful protests. I don't think they're very peaceful. And then we saw that Harvard University, their students took down the American flag and put up the Palestinian flag. And this whole idea of liberate Palestine when that land was given to the Jews by the Lord, who is the earth is the Lord's and all it contains, Psalm 24, verse 1, it's just insane. And that's our upside down world. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Now, the Bible tells us in Romans chapter 13, this is what government is supposed to do. Every person, Romans 13, 1, is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same, for it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Now, one of the big problems that we're having on college campuses is they've turned into indoctrination camps, and they're indoctrinating students to hate America. And America has always stood with Israel, because Genesis chapter 12, the Lord clearly says to Abraham, the father of all who believe, the father of Isaac, the father of Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, who had 12 sons, the 12 tribes of Israel, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. When you see nations coming against Israel, when you see governments like Hamas coming against Israel, just know that they are not going to succeed, because God is going to protect Israel. And God has a plan for Israel, and that is going to come to fruition. But when we see all this on college campuses, one of the things that comes to mind is the fact that, why are you not doing something, administration, to quell this quote-unquote peaceful protest, which is anything but? And I like what Governor Ron DeSantis said about this situation. Perhaps you heard this, or maybe you didn't, but here it is again.
You think about what happened when you have these Hamas demonstrators out. They're taking over bridges and they're taking over roads. And first of all, you don't have a right to do that. You have someone get stuck in traffic. How do you know if someone may need to get to a hospital? Someone may need to pick up a child somewhere, and you're just going to commandeer the road because you have this this ideological prediction? They tried to do that in Miami, and what happened? In 10 minutes, they got dragged off the road where they belonged, and we're not going to tolerate that. You look at these universities. When we have students who are doing things that, I mean, look, some of the stuff with the Hamas, I think is absurd that someone would go out and demonstrate on that. But, you know, when you're chasing Jewish students around, when you're not letting a Jewish professor enter a building, when you're targeting people like that, that's not free speech. I mean, that's harassment. That violates appropriate conduct. And yet, at Columbia, at Yale, all these places, those folks rule the roost. They do whatever they want. And these administrators and the presidents of these universities are weak. They're scared and they don't do anything. You know, you do that in Florida at our universities, we're showing you the door. You're going to be expelled when you're doing that stuff. And you know what? The minute people start to face consequences, you are not going to see this nonsense going on.
Well, I say amen to that. People need to experience the consequences for their actions. Now, to help me with this discussion, I've invited my good friend, Dr. Chuck Kelly, President Emeritus of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. He's a theologian, he's an author, and he has spent his whole life dealing with young people and training up young people for the ministry. And he knows a lot about dealing with younger people and how they get on a cause and that kind of thing. And so, Dr. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Pastor Jeff. Glad to be with you.
Well, I appreciate you so much, my friend, and I'm praying for you as you're grieving the loss of your dear, dear wife. She went home to be with the Lord February 17th, 2024, and the last time you were with me, Chuck, was right before she passed away.
That's correct. She was in the final stages of her battle with cancer, but she's having the best day she's ever had in her life. So even if I'm having a sad day, I'll take that deal every time. It's good for her.
Amen. Amen. What a testimony of a man loving his wife. Well, Dr. Kelly, I know you've been keeping tabs on what's going on on college campuses, especially the elite campuses, and all this stuff where students are basically supporting terrorism. I don't know if they understand what is going on. It seems like they're just jumping on the bandwagon, so to speak. From a college seminary president's position, how do you view all this stuff?
Well, you know, God has built into the universe a fundamental principle of order. You look up at the night sky, and navigators for centuries have been able to find their way because the stars function in an orderly way, and you can guide your course by looking at those stars. All the way through from that to the laws of a culture, order is what makes everything work. And our God is a God of order and intends for us to live orderly lives. Now, within an order, there is flexibility. Yes, there is such a thing as free speech, and the United States has the most liberal free speech protections of any nation in the history of the world. But if you lose that sense of order, you're eventually going to lose that free speech. And so that's what happens. You just have to have on a campus that sense of clearly defined order where everybody knows what the rules are and everybody functions in that way. And you don't go bumping into each other all the time. You have calm, you have peace, you have good learning environments, and we've just lost that on so many of our campuses.
Well, Dr. Kelly, when you think about the presidents of these universities just seeming so weak, just like Ron DeSantis said, you know, why aren't they doing something? Now, I understand that being president of a seminary is different than being president of a university like that. But the president has a lot of clout and authority, and it seems to me that the president could come in and shut that down very quickly if the president wanted to do so. How do you see that? If in your career, did you ever have a situation where somebody got out of line and you had to step in authoritatively to say, hey, we're not going to have any of that?
Yeah, those things happen. Whenever you have a gathering of human beings, you are going to have tension and conflict. Now, most of the time in most places, that stays at a fairly low level, but it occasionally escalates. Did I ever have to expel a student for reason of conduct? Yes, absolutely. And the technical phrase that we would use when expelling a student is for conduct unbecoming to a minister. There were standards of behavior that are required at NOBTS. Live within those standards, you've got lots of room. Violate those standards, and I'm sorry, that you don't have a place at NOBTS anymore. So this is something every institution has its rules of the road. Every institution has its expectations for student behavior. But when you stop enforcing those, you begin to have trouble. And what happens is there are just administrators and professors who really want to be liked and loved and be popular. And I think the key to that is go easy. Just let people run. If you want a class of three-year-olds to love you, leave them alone, and they'll go wild, and they'll be very happy. It'll be a mess. It'll be chaotic, and people are going to get hurt. But they'll just be loving that free environment. But you can't do that with a room full of three-year-olds. You have to have some ordered structure in there, or it will degenerate into violence and things being broken and people being hurt. It's just a matter of maintaining order, and every school has the ability to do that, has the standards for that, but they just stop enforcing the standards for a variety of reasons, and that's where the trouble comes in.
Amen. Ecclesiastes 8:11, Dr. Kelly, is a verse that I go back to a lot in my mind. It says, because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed quickly, therefore the hearts of the sons of men among them are given fully to do evil. I think about on these university campuses, because they're not doing anything, they just feel like they have free rein. You start gathering up those kids and expelling them and arresting them and bringing charges against them, you'd shut this thing down in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you would, Pastor. And that's the rule number one for having a safe and good and healthy environment, is just have clear boundaries. The great line from the Robert Frost poem, good fences make good neighbors. And that really is true, that it is the fences in life that help us know how to behave, how to act, how to respect one another. When you lose that, you just spiral more and more out of control. Every parent has seen this, and I just have done a lot of stuff with students and young people through the years. I can't count the number of youth camps I've done and things like that. And when you're around kids, you quickly see kids want boundaries. They want borders. They want walls, even if they don't think they do. And kids will push until they find out where the wall is. And then once they find out this is the wall, they stop. Nearly all of them stop pushing. And the ones who keep on beyond a wall, well, they're the troublemakers. But if you don't have those walls, if you don't have those boundaries, kids just keep pushing until they get there. And right now, on a lot of these college campuses, they're pushing, and there are no consequences, and there are no borders, and Governor DeSantis is exactly right. You've got to have consequences for actions, and it isn't just for college. It's also for life, and these students are supposed to be learning how to live a life. They're not getting very good lessons on the campuses of these elite colleges by any means on how life functions outside of school, because the world isn't nearly as comfortable as a college campus.
Yeah, that's a good word. Where we're talking to Dr. Chuck Kelly, we're talking about the situation on college campuses and the upside down world in which we live in today. We need to take note. We need to be praying. Thursday is the National Day of Prayer. Our nation needs prayer because it is coming apart at the seams. We desperately need God. Well, when we come back from the break, we're up against a break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to be talking to Dr. Kelly about the situation in the Southern Baptist Convention. We have a convention coming up in June, and six candidates for the president of the Southern Baptist Convention this June in Indianapolis, Indiana. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. And I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve, and we will be back right after this break. Don't go away. According to a recent report, Planned Parenthood continues to rake in billions despite dwindling clients.
The biggest takeaway here is that Planned Parenthood is generating vast profits, including millions in taxpayer funding. And preborn, that's you and me, are stealing their clientele, meaning the babies they're trying to kill. Preborn operates on a very slim budget as they rescue over 200 babies' lives every single day, and they receive no government funding. Preborn's network of clinics are situated in the darkest corners, competing head-to-head with the abortion giants, and they need our help now more than ever. When you donate $28 to Preborn, you will offer a free ultrasound to an expectant mother caught in crisis. Once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life, her baby's chances at life doubles. So please sponsor a precious baby's life. Your tax-deductible gift will go directly towards saving babies' lives. So be generous. You will never regret saving a baby's life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking to Dr. Charles Kelly. He's President Emeritus of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. He's a theologian. He's an author. And he's one of the sweetest, spirited guys I know. And so, Dr. Chuck, let's talk, shift gears. We've been talking about what's going on the university campuses. It's so upside down because rules are not being enforced. But now let's shift gears and talk about the Southern Baptist Convention. That's coming up very soon, early to mid-June, there in Indianapolis, Indiana. We have six guys that are quote-unquote running for president. I know it's not like that, but six guys that are going to be nominated for president, David Allen, Clint Presley, Bruce Frank, Mike Keabone, I think is how you say his name, Jared Moore, and Dan Spencer. All of those guys are pastors actively serving in a church right now. David Allen is a seminary professor and an author and a preaching coach. What do you make of this I'd like to call it a phenomenon. In my life, I've never seen that many people have their name on the ballot for president at one time. Is that something new that's going on in the SBC?
There is now a seventh candidate who threw his hat in the ring, and that is yet one more person. Pastor D.J. Horton, is what I understand, has thrown his hat in the ring and is also planning to run. So you have seven people who have announced plans to be nominated as president of the SBC.
Has that ever happened before, Dr. Chuck?
Not that I can remember. It's very unusual.
So what do you make? What do you make of that?
Well, I'm looking beyond that to the bigger issue, the huge issue. What Southern Baptists have a very difficult time grasping is the serious state of the Southern Baptist Convention. And right now, the Southern Baptist Convention is in the grip of decline, such as it has never faced before. And every meaningful statistic that Southern Baptists keep from the work of their churches is down across the board for several years. And so the big issue facing Southern Baptists, in my opinion, is not who's going to be the president as much as it is, will Southern Baptists actually accept the challenge of decline and intentionally seek to break its grip on the convention. One thing that I discovered accidentally when I was doing some research on the Southern Baptist Convention, I just accidentally stumbled across a little book that was published in 1938 called Methodist Can Be Born Again. by a man who was very well known as a British pastor and author, wrote two classic textbooks on preaching, published in 1938. Well, in 1938, Methodists were the largest Protestant denomination in the United States and the world. They were in their heyday, blowing and going. The world was their oyster, as we say in Louisiana. And Sangster wrote to his fellow Methodists and said, "We are in deep trouble. The statistics coming out of our churches are so bad, even a child could tell you where these statistics are leading the Methodist Church. If we do not stop and turn around, we have lost our focus on evangelism and discipleship, and we're getting all caught up in issues of social issues and political issues and issues of the secular world rather than the conversion of sinners and the discipling of saints."
Mm-hmm.
And Sangster's warning went unheeded. Again, the Methodists were at the top of their game as an overall organization. Well, we all know that's not true today. What followed years later is that the Methodist Church had the largest loss of membership in the history of American Christianity. Today, when you're seeing headlines about the Methodist Church, it's about thousands of their churches leaving the Methodist Church in state after state after state because pastors and people in the pew, they're just tired of the swamp that Methodism has fallen into in trying to deal with basically social and secular issues rather than with the gospel and reaching the world with the gospel. Well, guess what? That's where Southern Baptists are. We are at that spot where Methodists were when Sangster told them they needed to change and turn around and get back to first principles. We're the largest Protestant denomination in the United States, but we've lost 3 million members in the last 10 years. Our worship attendance is down by about 1.5 million. Our baptisms per church have gone from 9.9 baptisms per church to about 3.2, 3.4 baptisms per church. Mm-hmm. And on I can go. All the statistics that are coming out of our church are just abysmal. And just a few weeks ago, Lifeway, a Southern Baptist entity, has a research department, and they have documented that we are losing more churches leaving the convention than we are starting new churches. So for me, the issue is not which of the seven people is going to win in terms of who that person is. It's are we going to get focused on the serious challenge that the convention faces? Here's what's very unusual, and then I'll be quiet, about the convention in Indianapolis coming up in 2024, June 2024. Number one, we have a new president for the executive committee of the Southern Baptist Convention. That has not happened. They've been without one for more than 2 years. And the person who's been elected to that spot, Dr. Jeff Orge, widely loved, widely respected, very solid traditional Baptist theology, very solid on Baptist polity, and has been a terrific leader in the West. He's been a church planter, a pastor, a state executive, and the beloved president of Gateway Seminary for a number of years. He's going to start his role, and that will be his first convention. We have a new president who's going to be elected, and whoever it is will be eligible for two consecutive terms. And we finally have a report from a task force appointed by the convention to report to the convention the impact of the Great Commission resurgence on the convention, which has been very, very pitiful. So that combination of circumstances puts the convention in the most ideal scenario it's ever going to have on facing the problem of decline. But mm-hmm. will the convention choose to do so or not? That's what has me the most interested about the SBC in June.
Okay, Dr. Kelly, I know you wrote a book on that. It had a lot of statistical information in there. It seems irrefutable to me. I mean, you look at the numbers and you do the calculations, and it's like, hey, we're on a decline. Is that agreed upon by all of the entity heads when you talk about the North American Mission Board, the International Mission Board, the Executive Committee, the seminary presidents? Do they all agree, or did you get a lot of pushback on that book you produced and said, no, you're not looking at it correctly, you know, you're making statistics say whatever you want them to say?
The operative word to describe the reaction of SBC leaders is silence. And what I have learned is that the Southern Baptist Convention just has a very difficult time imagining itself in the grip of decline and headed on a downward arc. And so, no one has told me the statistics are wrong. No one has said anything to the contrary. There is no other set of numbers out there that you can look at. Mm-hmm. But the response is silence. So it's not an issue people want to talk about. It's not an issue people want to focus on. And all through my time as president of the seminary, when I was an entity head, the entity heads would meet together every year, twice a year in meetings, and I would bring up some issue related to our evangelism decline, which is what started first, and then other things in nearly every meeting. But no one ever wanted to talk about it. And so the problem comes, silence doesn't make problems go away. And right. It has not gone away. So that's that's where we are right now, is whether or not we are willing to take this issue of decline head on, to admit it's a problem and go after a solution.
Okay, Dr. Kelly, you know, as a pastor over the years, we get invited to all these church growth conferences and how you can do this and how you can do that. You know, Rick Warren had his Saddleback conference for years and years and years. And it seems like with all the training that is out there, our churches should be busting at the seams. What is the disconnect there?
The disconnect is a lack of interest in reaching the lost people in our communities for Christ. I have the biggest change in the Southern Baptist Convention that I have witnessed in my lifetime. You had the huge theological transformation that happened out of the conservative resurgence that brought Southern Baptists back to a biblical theology. After that profound change, the biggest change is the lack of interest in evangelism. Southern Baptists have always been passionate about evangelism. And you get together with pastors and they would often be talking, how many people did you baptize? What are you doing that's reaching people? But it's this deafening silence on our failure to reach people in our communities that is the big change. And so the training and everything that is going on is useless if people don't take advantage of it. If you are trained, but you don't use that training, incorporate that training into how you handle your life and your ministry, that training is useless. So it isn't a matter of whether or not there's training available, there are options available. It's, do you have a passionate desire to reach the lost in your community with the gospel? Are you focused on doing that? And we have a great paradox today with a lot of the rising generation of pastors. They are very passionate about missions, taking the gospel to places where there's not much gospel witness. Feel very strongly about that, but not about the guy at the dry cleaner. Mm-hmm. Not about the lost neighbors, not about the children of your friends who are not saved. So you have a church, has a mission program, and we've never had more Southern Baptist churches in our history who are taking one or more mission trips a year with their people somewhere else. And there's an interest in people hearing about Jesus somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But that same church that has a strategy or missions somewhere else does not have an active strategy in place for reaching the lost of their community. That's a paradox and a dangerous one.
Yeah, that's a big concern. You know, we always talk about on this program, I talk about to my church, shine and share. That's our mission before the Lord. Our reason for being here is to be His witnesses. And you shine the way you live and you share. You open your mouth and you tell people what great things the Lord has done for you, and you point the way to Jesus. And we're to do that everywhere we go. Now, Dr. Kelly, you know, we used to have evangelism explosion training or some kind of a witnessing training program. Most churches have gotten away from that. Do you see that as something churches need to adopt again? It's harder and harder to go out and visit people that visited your church because, you know, they're not as open as they were maybe 30 years ago to you just knocking on their door. How do you see that taking place?
Well, I would say two things. Number one, yes, we need to go out and share the gospel in every way that we can, and you don't need to be you don't need to say no for people. You need to be willing to go knock on those doors or interact with people or do things that draw people to the presentation of the gospel. But there's something more. What many people have completely lost sight of is, how do lost people come to Christ? What draws lost people to Christ? And the answer is a vibrant, visible Christian life. That is so very crucial. I used to wonder a lot about the times of great persecution the church has faced, when Christians were being slaughtered for their commitment to Christ. And very often in the history of the church, the times and places of the worst persecution often turned out to be places where the gospel exploded and was spreading like wildfire. How in the world? It is because the power of the life of the believers in the community. People saw such an impact of Christ in the lives of their neighbors and their friends and people they worked with, that they wondered, how can that happen to me? I want what they have. Well, Baptists have lost our distinctive presence in the community. I grew up, Pastor Jeff, in a time when people told jokes about Baptists. And I got a whole litany of Baptist jokes that people would tell. People don't tell jokes about Baptists anymore because we blend into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We live just the way our neighbors live for the most part.
Yeah.
And so we don't stand out anymore. That has really undercut our gospel witness.
We're talking to Dr. Chuck Kelly, President Emeritus of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, your host. We'll be back after the break.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email pastorjeff@fromhisheart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here, talking to my good friend, Dr. Charles Kelly. He is President Emeritus of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. And Dr. Kelly is a theologian, he's an evangelist, and he is an author. And we're talking about what's going on in the Southern Baptist Convention, the decline in the convention. Now, Dr. Kelly, I heard, it might have been Billy Graham way back when, but I think I heard your brother-in-law, Paige Patterson, share this, that in the average Baptist church, 50% of the congregation, on average, have never been born again. Now, I know it's hard to put a number on that, but what would you say in the average Baptist church when you start thinking about who is truly saved and tares among the wheat and that kind of thing? What is your take on you're a preacher Sunday morning, you look out on the congregation. How many of those church members do you think have really had an experience with Jesus Christ?
Well, the comment that you shared goes back to Billy Graham, and it was not a comment directed to the Baptist church. It was the church in general, all churches everywhere. And I would say that Baptist churches have a much higher percentage of people who are truly born again than many other churches because we focus on that. In other words, infant baptism does not result in a lot of conversions. Let me just put it that way. But when you cannot be a member of the church unless you are baptized, are there people who are baptized who have never made a genuine profession of faith? Yes, I'm sure that happens, but it's just going to be smaller. So I would not use the figure of 50%, and I would hate to put a number on it, but are there people who are unsaved in Baptist churches who are baptized and members of the Baptist church and regular attenders? Yes, there are. And that is why it's so important for pastors to continue to preach the gospel, continue to call people to Christ. I would tell my students when it comes to the use of the invitation, you have to always be thorough and careful in using the invitation and tell people exactly what to do, because people don't listen to what the pastors say many times about responding to the invitation unless they're under conviction. And their mind may be on what's for lunch after church or something else. They're starting to check out the service because they know, okay, it's just about over. So when conviction comes and God has grabbed that soul, now they're paying attention, and you need to carefully tell them how to be saved and what to do. And so, okay, Doug, yes, there are people in our churches who are not saved, and we need to keep lifting the gospel up for that reason in church as well as going outside the church.
Now, I've heard pastors say this for years. You know, the church exists. You hear pastors say, well, the moment that you become a Christian and you become a member of this church, the church is no longer for you. We are for those outside the church. And to me, that seems like a ridiculous statement, because the Great Commission is go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them and then teaching them all that I commanded you. So when you think about the Sunday morning, the local church, is the Sunday morning service for evangelism, or is it for discipleship, or which one is going to get the emphasis?
Well, they both have to. Now, let me give you an illustration from ancient Christianity. One of the most fascinating trips I've ever done was a trip across North Africa with a small group of people. In North Africa, in the 3rd and 4th century of the church especially, was the hotbed of Christianity. It was the center of the Christian world. Many of your listeners will recognize the name Augustine or Augustine, depending on whether you're from the South Augustine, or the more formal pronunciation of Augustine. He was one of the great theologians in the history of the church. Well, I went to his church, the ruins of his church, where he spent much of his ministry. And they had built a chapel on an anniversary of his birth, a very beautiful chapel in his honor, and it had stained glass scenes of his life, including a scene of him being baptized by sprinkling. But you go to his church, and Augustine had an immersionist baptistry, and he baptized by immersion. But here's the way his church was set up. The baptistry was at the front door of the church, just outside the church, and inside is where the instruction took place. And architecture always communicates a message, always. And the message, and we saw that pattern in other ancient churches, that the baptism took place before you were allowed to be a part of the worship service. You had to be a Christian. So that was in the ancient church, and there is a very important reason why you have to emphasize the need for conversion all the time. But you also have to disciple, and those two things go together, and you can't just simply be a purist. I only talk about evangelism in this place. You have to talk about evangelism all the time, but you also have to disciple continually. So the pastor of a church has that role. And I would always tell my students, what you want to do is make sure that every sermon includes a gospel explanation that might come in the invitation at the close of the sermon. The gospel might be the focal point of the whole sermon, and it needs to be periodically. Pastors, if you're not including messages sprinkled into your preaching program that are strictly a gospel presentation, you're making a mistake. But that gospel presentation, even in a message that is designed for Christians dealing with a matter of doctrine, you still need to include in that message somewhere at some point an explanation on how to be saved. So I think it's a both and, that you present the gospel clearly all the time, but you also have to speak. What's happened now is we have a generation of pastors who view themselves as teachers of the Bible, and they are very thorough in their teaching of the Bible, and they are very careful about teaching the Bible faithfully and accurately, but they're just not thinking about presenting the gospel, because after all, they're in church, and that's where Christians are.
Yeah.
So sadly, most of those people are also not going outside the church to share the gospel. They just really enjoy teaching the Bible. We don't have the luxury of picking one or the other. We have to do both, and we have to do them side by side.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so in the book of the Revelation, chapters 2 and 3, you have the seven letters to the seven churches. So if Jesus were going to give a letter to the Southern Baptist Convention, what do you think would be in that letter?
Yes, all of them. I mean, have we lost our first love? Yes, Southern Baptists have lost their first love. And there is no doubt in my mind about that. And we have lost our sense of mission, and we have grown very careless about our whole approach to evangelism. We've shifted our passion for the gospel to the people who live somewhere else rather than the people around us. But we are also carnal in our behavior, and we have some teachers who are not teaching accurately. And I would just say that the seven churches of Revelation are wrapped up in many churches today, all seven. And you don't find many churches that are purely just one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Chuck, let me ask you this. So I've had people say to me, with the Southern Baptist Convention drifting left, and we have the big law amendment that we're voting on to change the Constitution, or to add to the Constitution the fact that a pastor, clearly in Scripture, is a husband of one wife. He is to be a man, and we're not supposed to have female pastors, and so that will be a telling vote. What would you say to pastors and to churches as to when might be the time that things aren't turning around? I don't want to keep investing our church resources in something that I personally wouldn't support.
Well, Pastor Jeff, I have to tell you, I am putting the finishing touches on an essay about the June meeting of the SBC that I'll probably release sometime next week. And my feeling is that we are in such a dangerous place as a convention. I actually think we don't have much choice, if we're really serious about turning around our decline, other than to say, just stop. If it were up to me, I wouldn't vote on the law amendment this time. You know what my convictions are, that men ought to be pastors. There's so much confusion around it. Yes, most Southern Baptists clearly agree that the pastor of a church must be male. The Scripture teaches that. But it's gotten confused with the issue of, well, do you use the word pastor in the job description or the title of other ministry staff who are clearly not the lead pastor of the church? And if you do that, should you be kicked out of the convention if you have a staff member who has the term pastor in their job title if he's not the lead pastor of the church? Lots of confusion. we have the Sexual Abuse Task Force report that's coming up, and lots of confusion about that. And the problem is, and this is what happened to Methodists, there were always these big issues that they needed to address, and after we do that, then we're going to get back to evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
It never comes. There's always another issue.
Yeah.
And so I think the only thing we could do is to simply stop. Just stop the discussions where we are now. You can advance the discussions, but do it off the floor of the convention. And in my essay, I talk about what we can do to advance discussions, but not on the floor of the convention. And give our attention completely to this issue of the severe decline of the Southern Baptist Convention before it gets worse, and start thinking strategically, how are we going to break the grip of decline? Because no denomination in history has ever been able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Once they start declining, nobody turns it around. And this is one of the reasons why. There are always other things to do besides address the issue of decline. And you have to get it very focused. You have to really give it undivided attention, which, as I told you, our convention is very reluctant to do. Even our leadership of the convention, very reluctant to look at the actual circumstances of the convention and talk about it and strategize for it. So that's where I think we are as a convention, that the only way we're going to turn this around is if we make it the single focus of our attention.
Dr. Kelly, why are they so reluctant to face the brutal facts?
Southern Baptists are very optimistic. That's who we are. I mean, that's just how we're wired up. We're very optimistic, and we're accustomed to everything working. We're the largest Protestant denomination in the United States. We have the largest missionary force on the planet of the earth. We're doing all these great things. We have 6 of the 10 largest seminaries in the nation are Southern Baptist seminaries, and blah, 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 blah. We're just accustomed to everything working well and all being right in the Southern Baptist world. And to accept the fact that it's not, for a leader to stand in front of the convention and say, I'm sorry, we are not hitting our goals. What we thought we were going to accomplish, we have not accomplished. What we planned did not work as expected. I mean, that is just a nightmare mm-hmm. for someone to stand in front of the convention and say that. And of course, a part of the dynamic undergirding this is that sense of brokenness. Are we willing to come before God and say, God, we really need your help.
Yes.
We are broken as a people. We're not doing what you want us to do, clearly, because you are not blessing. You are not operating through our churches as you once did. Oh, God, have mercy on us.
Yes.
And that confession of brokenness is very hard for Southern Baptists to do.
Yeah.
And that willingness to say, we've got to change. We have to change. We must do things differently. What are we going to do? It's very hard.
Great word. Well, we need to repent. We need to seek the Lord with all our hearts and have a broken heart over the situation that is before us. Well, Dr. Chuck Kelly has been my guest today, and always a pleasure, Dr. Kelly. Thank you for coming on today, and thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today. Listen, share this message today. Go on AFR.net. Share it with a pastor. He needs to hear this, especially that last plea. And go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and know that God will use you as his witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.